It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wildcat Golf Club for ESPN Houston's Occasional Invitational. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we hear in the world something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Wildcat Country Club for the Occasional Invitational. It's a packed house. You guys can't see because the camera's pointed at me, but a lot of people here waiting to get started. A little rain, but things will get going at 11, so you've heard John all morning yell and be very abrasive, but he'll be out in the course, so maybe you'll see him out there if you're on your way. The golf will get going here in about an hour, so if you're on your way or we're worried about the weather, don't come out here. For the Occasional Invitational benefiting kids' meals, we have lunch in store from Brown Bag Deli. Also, we'll have Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage for dinner and lunch as well. So it's going to be a nice time. Carbach is out here as well. We're going to have a good time. But beyond that, you might be hearing the background noise as I speak. But beyond all that, we did have a pretty compelling game considering the circumstances. The Rockets played last night. They did drop a game to the Thunder, but when you look at that lineup, and you kind of got word yesterday that guys are questionable, like Dylan Brooks, Naaman Thompson, and Şengün, among others. We knew Fred wasn't going to play at all. You think to yourself, questionable could mean, hey, game time decisions. But it looks like this was never going to be a thing where they had most of their starters. They knew they had a back to back. They've got to go play in Indiana tonight. A tough place to play, considering the pace the Pacers like to play at. That should be an offensive game tonight. You'd like to have a team at full strength, and if you want to win one of the games, and you think the Thunder one is one you might want to throw away, or you're going to lose anyway, why not make the decision? It's a little rough if you're a fan of the team, thinking, all right, we're playing the best team in the West. Let's give it our best shot. But if the guys are a little banged up, Ime had a choice to make, and he made it, and now, to pay off that choice, you got to beat the Pacers, particularly if your guys are going to play or if they could have played last night but they decided not to. If they're really injured, then they're really injured. There's nothing you can do about that. But if this was all the plan, you need to win tonight against a Pacers team who has played pretty well. They won their last game. They did drop a game a couple nights ago in overtime, but they won their game, and I think it was against the Bulls. So it'll be Pacers-Rockets tonight. But I guess the story from the game was the emergence of Reed Shepard. He got the start, which was a bit surprising. Maybe Ime wanted to keep the rotation as close to normal as possible, like bringing Aaron Holiday off the bench. But we've seen Aaron Holiday sometimes start when Fred's not available. But with so many guys out, and he had to maneuver that rotation, he just brought Reed in, and he played well, at least scoring-wise. I think the way the Thunder set up defensively was a big help to him. They played plenty of drop coverage with their big, so you just put him in pick and roll and let Reed flow into jumpers, and he shot the ball really well, which is something that he's known for. He just happened to not do really throughout the year. It affected his playing time because as a smaller combo guard, if you're not shooting, what's your actual benefit of the team when you have enough wings who can go play defense? Wow, the Rockets didn't get any stops. Like, you look at the game last night, Cam Whitmore and Reed Shepard combined for 52 points, and they outscored Shea by 2. They had a good night from the backcourt, and still, Shea goes for 50, 10 for 10 from the foul line, which you come to expect. He's just going to get to the line. And in a game where you thought the Rockets were cooked from the start, they were competitive. That's all you can really ask for. You know, you were never really in it in the fourth quarter, I would say. Ime made the decision to pull the guys like Jalen, who is a guy who plays all the time. He decided at at a point when they're down by 14 to just pull him. You're playing guys like Nate Williams, who they just signed to a guaranteed deal, just to see how it would go. And they stayed in it, but it's one of those games where you just chalk it, toss it aside and go, you know what, we were never supposed to win that game considering our circumstances. It was a good time to get some of their guys some run and to see Cam Whitmore in a spot where, hey, Cam, just go score. You don't really have to play within the confines of anything. You don't have to get Shingun shots. You don't have to facilitate. Just go get buckets. And he did that. That's what he's best at. And Reed Shepherd did that as well. But they do drop it. And they got the pace tonight. And I welcome Sean Mapes to the show. What's up, Sean?
Doing good. A dripping wet Sean Mapes.
Yeah, the rain clouds are in. That's what, you see all the people in the room right now. They decided we're not going to wait outside. We'll wait in here, get something to eat, and wait till about 11 when they're going to tee off. But, yeah, I've been in here since about 6:30, so I haven't had to worry about it. But that was a concern coming here today, that rain would be in the forecast. But as the weather reporting is going, everybody should be good to go at about 11.
Yeah, and this is not a revolutionary observation, but, man, Houston drivers, when it rains, they get a lot worse.
Yeah, Sean had to venture just outside the loop. It's not something you generally like to do.
Well, the station is outside the loop.
Yes,
it
is.
By the strictest definition.
Sure, but you're never really in this part of town.
No.
There's no real reason for it for you. I'm generally somewhere near the area just because of how where I live, but Sean's here, and he has some issues with the weather and the people, but it is what it is. He got here safe, so we're good to go. So, obviously, you heard the first part of the show talking about Rockets and Thunder. The prevailing thought is Ime said, you know what, some of my guys are banged up. I'm going to toss this one aside and give some guys who don't get a lot of extended minutes a run and see how it goes, and they acquitted themselves well. Do we believe it? Were his guys really hurt? And would they have been compromised playing last night, or was it strictly, hey, we got a back to back, we don't play well in back to backs, we think the Pacers game is much more winnable if our guys have a day of rest, we'll do it that way.
I think that the Fred VanVleet injury seems like that's an actual re-aggravation of, and maybe he's not going to be out for a month again, but he's going to miss some time, you'd think, with hurting that ankle like he did right at the start of Saturday's game. I guess the guy to watch is Tari Eason, who does not play back-to-backs, and sitting him on the front half of a back-to-back, that will definitely raise the eyebrow if he plays on the second half of a back-to-back, because that means that, or that at least speaks to the Rockets taking a look at the schedule, looking at a back-to-back and going, let's do that game instead. Because normally, vast majority of these things, any team just plays the guy on the first night of the back-to-back, and if he can't play a second, he doesn't play the second. But they always play the first one. If you flip that, that speaks to some strategy and picking your spots.
Yeah, Tari Eason is the pressure point of this thing.
Yes.
Him not playing last night would suggest the Rockets were like, you know what, we're probably not going to win this one anyway. Even though we think we can compete with them, it's in their building, and let's not lose this one and then compromise ourselves against the Pacers. When they'll have a rest advantage because they did not play on Monday night. So I think that's a solid point by you, that the Tari Eason part of it lets you know that there's some strategy here, and they're going to give it their best to go get a game. It's a tough two-game stretch. As I was saying, the Pacers play an offensive style that's going to put a lot of pressure on you. They want to play up tempo. They're going to get shots up. They're going to try to get things done before you're set and ready, even off of made baskets. They're always looking to get out and push. It makes a lot of sense to be at your best tonight against a style of play you don't see very much. That would be another concern. Hey, we don't really see this very much. We don't want to be worn out and have them run us off the court because we put in max effort the night before. I know this will hit the traditionalists in a way that says, what are we doing? But in a long season where you can assume, even though they will tell you we would never toss a game aside, the action suggests they're like, you know what, not this one.
Yeah.
We think the Pacers one is more very much winnable.
And I am interested in the in the Pacers-Rockets matchup because it is seemingly pretty conflicting styles, but not super conflicting because they both like to get out and run. So that will be a consideration that they're both going to get out there, try to run. One is going to try to do it offensively. They're all pretty much, they're not all one-way guys, but they're all guys that are way better at offense than they are defense on the Pacers. And then the Rockets are the flip side of that, and they play a very pressure defense up in your face. But they also like to run. So it's going to be a very fun game in that way.
We have some relatively breaking news. I didn't really believe it because this, I thought Shams would have a verified.
A blue check?
Yeah, I thought he would be verified, but.
He's not paying.
I know. I thought they would just verify him. He is Shams. But this one is an official tweet from Shams Charania. Kyrie Irving suffered a torn ACL. So a disaster class of a Mavs last month or so continues. The trading of Luka, the belief by Nico Harrison that this was more of a win-now move. Of course, Anthony Davis plays in the first game, likely because he felt some pressure to play, considering the trade. He hasn't played since he played against the Rockets, and now your remaining star, Kyrie Irving, tears his ACL last night, so he's out for the year. So from bad to worse for that organization. I mean, we don't have sympathy for Dallas, but considering what they thought the Luka trade was going to bring them, they thought we were going to compete this year and then compete next year. But Kyrie getting hurt in March of 2025, what keeps him out, considering how NBA 2's injuries, does he even play in 2026? If he does, he comes back when? Maybe
January?
The start of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah, and who knows where they are at that point in a year. And if they're really bad to start, why bring Kyrie back if you think, I don't know what their draft status is.
I think they should, I mean.
Well, who will their backcourt be? Caleb Martin and
Max Christie,
and Max
baby.
Christie? Yeah, I probably tank a year. I don't think they're going to be very good until Kyrie comes back. And if they're not good, just sit them down.
Spencer Dinwiddie, AD pick and rolls.
You're not naming names that would give me confidence. Not in the West.
That's a 10 seed.
You think? Who are the 10? Well, they're barely a 10 seed now.
I know.
Yeah.
that is tough. But they finally got that bum Luka off their team.
That's right. I mean.
That's why they're a 10 seed. They're stuck with Luka.
Yeah, and he was hurt for quite a bit this year, and that's why they were kind of scuffling, and they made the trade. And then Kyrie, the guy who had been, at least in their eyes, the model citizen, is out for the rest of the year as well. So bad news for the Mavericks. That's their season is done for. And if you're AD, other than your reputation, why are you coming back now? I mean, they have, what, about a month plus left?
Just 5 weeks?
Yeah, just stay. Just stay sidelined. And like I said, I don't know where their draft picks are, but if they control their own, no reason. Get Max Christie some run. Tell Daniel Gafford to sit down. Tell Derek Lively to sit down. And pack it up for the rest of the year. So that's the breaking news.
They got a play-in push.
So that's the breaking news from Shams. Kyrie Irving tears his ACL. Okay, we are out at Wildcat Golf Club. The background noise may be a bit overwhelming. I don't know. I don't know how it sounds. AJ can tell us during the break. But everyone is in here waiting for the weather to pass so they can go out and play golf for the occasional invitational benefiting kids' meals. And we'll talk more about the Rockets. We'll get into some NFL stuff and certainly the Astros because we got a new potential star. And people think Cam Smith should already be a lock for the Major League roster. We'll get into that throughout the show as well. We're just getting started here. We will be back.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Houston's independent voice for sports talk.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wildcat Golf Club for ESPN Houston's Occasional Invitational. Here's Del Olalea.
I'll apologize to AJ right now because I'm going to make an assumption that you don't play golf. Am I right on that?
Yeah, you're right.
So, Sean, you don't play?
No.
I don't play. So I'm trying to figure out the foursome of the least likely people to ever play golf at the station. So I think us three clearly, because we don't play.
Yeah.
Is there, who's the
good
fourth?
Start.
Does Paul play?
Paul's played before,
okay.
Though. He doesn't play. He mentioned that he hasn't played in a while.
So obviously,
I don't know if
John and Lance play.
I don't know if he would self-report
as a golfer,
but.
But he has played.
Yeah.
Neither you haven't even swung a club on a golf course, right?
Oh no, I have.
Oh, but, okay.
I mean,
but you
I,
don't play.
I haven't finished a round.
Okay. So AJ, me, you. What about BMAC? Is he a golfer?
I don't know. He's never mentioned it, so I'd
assume
if he's never mentioned it,
he's not a golfer.
Yeah.
If he's never mentioned it.
Yeah, he's a 40-year-old man who hasn't mentioned golfing,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, so we know the morning show plays John more heavily than Lance. Paul certainly has. Jeremy and Joel, right? They both play, I assume.
I've gotten a text from Brian. I'm not a golfer at all.
Okay, so there it is. The at all cements it for me.
At all.
Not at all. So I'm going to go, our foursome would be the least likely foursome to ever play golf here at Wildcat if it ever came down to it.
Yeah.
But so I don't. There won't be a lot of golf talk, not that there is any reason for it, other than, hey, it is the occasional invitational, and the people are waiting. Art tells me you can hear them in the background. He says they're loud. He also added some other things I will not say about them just because I'm not looking to get beat up by golfers. But beyond that, I did finish a Nora last night. We talked about it. And it did go from whatever
a
you want to call it.
Right.
Whatever you want to call the first 25, 30 minutes of it. It went from that into like the slapstick comedy the last hour plus, and a half or so. It was fine. I would say I can't judge all the other movies and whether they were worthy of an Academy Award because I didn't watch them other than, I didn't watch any of the other nominated
Dune
ones.
Two?
I did watch Dune 2. I forgot that was nominated. But I mean, if this is the winner of the Academy Award, I'm like, all right, okay. I'm surprised. It didn't seem I always think of an award winner as something that's epic, that maybe sends a message. You mean to tell me a sex worker's life is tough? I knew that already.
It's hard. It's hard out here.
It's hard. Thanks, Sean, for rubber stamping that as well. I knew that it was tough. I didn't know that if you were in bed with a Russian oligarch's son at noon, that you could be getting a divorce in a matter of hours. I didn't know it could happen that quickly, but it did in the movie. As long as the mom doesn't like you and calls you a prostitute over and over again, much to your chagrin. But it's fine. I would say that movie's fine.
Okay,
that's all.
Okay, so you didn't see Conclave?
I haven't seen. I'm gonna watch Conclave. I haven't.
Was the substance?
I don't know. I've seen, once again, one of those movies I've only seen the first 20 minutes or so of. But
you kind of get most of the movie. I mean, you need to watch the entire thing,
sure.
But you get what it's about in the first 20 minutes.
So that's maybe one of the reasons I kind of tuned out. As I said, I'll get to it at some point. But credit to Anora, credit to Mikey Madison for winning a Oscar at 24 years old. Quite an accomplishment. But as far as the overall movie, I think her performance was great. But as far as the overall movie, all right, sure. It ain't Return of the King. It ain't Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
That'd be crazy if it was Return of the King. You're like, it is a
It is the sex worker version of Return of the King.
The sex worker marries a Russian oligarch, and guess what? It's just like Return of the King.
That's right. The mom is Sauron.
Okay.
Igor's Gandalf. All those things.
There's a Igor in this movie?
In Anora, yes.
Wow.
She.
So it is about Russian oligarchs.
Igor plays the henchman with the heart of gold. Although he initially tied her up to restrain her because she was going off. But hey, I appreciate the efforts, everybody.
Igor's got to do what he's got to do.
He does. He's got a boss, but he did like her. He was very kind, and the movie ended somewhat oddly. But hey, Mikey Madison takes home the Academy Award. That's my review of Anora. Okay, so Cam Smith, the buzz is building for him. He continues to hit the baseball, and this show has talked about how he would have to be pretty remarkable to make this roster, and so far he has been. I know there was one account who pretty much guaranteed, one of the prominent Astros accounts who pretty much guaranteed that Cam Smith was going to make the opening day roster, and then I think someone from 790 was like, there's no way he makes it. no way. Like, just really just crapped all over the comment. That man was looking for engagement. He quote tweeted him and crapped all over it. I don't know how much he has to hit. The good thing is, it's spring training pitching, which certainly pales in comparison to what he will see throughout a major league season. But at least he's hitting. That's all you can ask for from the biggest prospect you got out of the Kyle Tucker trade. Really, as far as your young talent in your farm system, he is your top prospect, and it's nice to see that he has adjusted well to spring training pitching in an Astros uniform.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely would prefer this than to have him be even, like, unremarkable. If we just didn't have any, like, Cam Smith, if he was just, you know, 2 for 5 every night or every day in spring training, that'd be one thing. Having him show out like this definitely does give you a little bit of optimism for it. I agree with the more prudent approach to this of, hey, this is a guy who's only played like 20 something, or maybe even less than 20 double-A games in his career. So opening day seems like a stretch. Opening day on the MLB seems like a stretch. So I think so far you have to be encouraged. And with the Astros, you know, especially with Dana Brown, is that if he continues this into the minor league system, in the minor league season, whether he's in Corpus or Sugarland, you know that they're going to bring him up pretty fast, because that's what happened last year with Lo Perfido, with Jake Bloss, with a lot of these guys that Dana Brown kind of fast-tracked to the majors. Some of that had to do with injuries, and some of that isn't easy to replicate because, hopefully, you're not going to be hit as hard with the injury bug as you were this year. But I think the speed at which that Dana Brown seems comfortable calling up these guys gives you some hope that if you don't see Cam Smith on opening day, that sometime in 2025 isn't out of the question, or opening day 2026 definitely isn't out of the question.
Yeah, Dana Brown isn't what the Astros were, where your top prospects were coming up at 24, 25 because you wanted to slow the clock. All the financial reasons why you would do it, that's not how they operate anymore. So if Cam Smith can help the team early on in his Astros tenure, it'll happen. I'm happy to see it. Once again, I'm glad that we can talk about him as a baseball player, not how his uniform fits.
It does fit well, though.
We've been told by multiple people out there that he's a unit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's living up, at least right now, to the accolades that were bestowed on him when he was in the Cubs organization, and now when we made that trade. So, at least so far, of course, we have not seen Kyle Tucker do anything meaningful for the Cubs, because if he has a great year, although you were never going to keep him, maybe the Dana Brown praise that he would get for the Cam Smith trade, that's what I'm going to call it, the Cam Smith trade.
Yeah, that's what it is in my book.
Maybe that
after this spring training? Please.
Maybe it would lessen, but right now, he picked the right guy to go get from the Cubs. And what they did earlier in the offseason makes him a likely, if he does come up, do they put him out in the outfield? Like, we already have this problem. We're throwing Altuve out there. We know the outfield isn't great. But when you bring in Paredes, and you likely are playing Dubon at second, and, of course, Walker, Cam Smith's early spot to play, wouldn't it be someplace in the outfield? If he were to get time, let's say he gets called up in June for whatever reason. Obviously, if there's a major injury, he might be playing third. But who knows? But if he's called up and your roster's relatively healthy, you just want an extra bat that you can maybe trust. Is he playing in the outfield to start?
You'd think that's the easiest way to get him on the field, is to put him in right and have him be replacing Chaz McCormick, or I don't know if Dubon is going to play a lot of right. That'd make most sense if you're saying that Paredes isn't the guy who's injured, who's causing the call up. That also seems easier than moving Paredes to second midway through the season. Espada talked the other day about how with Jose Altuve, they kind of want him in left, and they don't plan on having him switch back and forth. They want to play him primarily at left instead of switching him back to second base super often during the season, and you'd imagine the same, at least theory, holds with Paredes playing third base almost exclusively, but being able to play second if need be, but you'd hope that the need doesn't be.
Yeah. I believe what they've done so far is at least making do with what they could, considering the type of financial constraints they were under, placed on them by their owner. I think Dana Brown's done a pretty good job building a major league roster that certainly can win the AL West, and if the pitching is as good as it can be, then maybe we're talking about one. They got one more in them, maybe two more in them. We will see. Maybe just one more, because Fromber's likely not going to be around next year. If he pitches up to his standard, he's not coming back.
If he has a good year,
he's not coming back. So as much as the window talk is always going to be a thing, I don't want to bury them after this year, but this feels like the time. Like you went out and added some veterans that you think will help, and Fromber's got the year before he likely departs. And Altuve playing in left, if that extends his career or I don't know. We will see how that plays out. Putting him in left may make him certainly less of a defensive liability, so you may be more comfortable with him out there. I think this is, if not the last year, then they've got 2026, so I think they've done a good enough job to be in contention. And who knows? Who knows what shakes out when it's time to maybe make an acquisition around the trade deadline, but at least with the Giant trade this offseason, they got a player who appears to be a keeper, and that's good on Dana Brown. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk about what the Texans can do to add to their roster. Lance Zierlein has his latest mock draft, and the big story out of it is the fact that Shador Sanders has dropped, and he's not the only guy, as far as Lance, to drop Shador into the draft. I think Dane Brugler from The Athletic has Shador in the 20s. Lance has him in the 20s as well. But we'll talk about where Lance has the Texans.
The Killer Bees, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wildcat Golf Club for ESPN Houston's Occasional Invitational. Here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. Sean and I are out at the Occasional Invitational. The entire station will be broadcasting live. You heard John Lance from 7 to 10. We go to 12, and then Paul Gallant from 12 to 3, and then the Killer Bees. Of course, the golf will begin. It was supposed to start at 10:30, but there were weather issues, so it looks like 11 o'clock is when the golf will begin. And really, that's only important for me and maybe for anyone listening, because it'll get quieter in here. The people are just staying out of the weather, just waiting to get their round going. So once 11 o'clock hits, it might be a more normal atmosphere as they head on out. But I want to thank Carbach Brewing for bringing the beer, Brownback Deli for lunch, and the Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage for dinner. Game Day Men's Health's been out here all morning. Other sponsors like HRMP, you hear us talk about them all the time, Gulf Coast Chevy, Access Vascular Health, all the people here, Dream Rate Mortgage, Aqueduct Plumbing, Billy Brown was on earlier, Beatbox, Burritos, Amex Pharmacy, all proud sponsors of the Occasional Invitational. I want to thank all of them for helping get this thing off the ground. Of course, Courtney from the promo team as well, and benefiting a great cause in kids' meals. Love to help out, and that's what we're out here for. Okay, so Lance gets to write it for his mock draft. You and Paul will do a mock draft of the day. Generally, if one gets released, you guys will talk about it, because it's that time of the year. It's draft season, but Lance's 2.0 mock came out. And beyond, as I said, the Shador Sanders news, or at least his projection for Shador Sanders, it's the fact that he has the Texans moving up and taking a Texas Longhorn, Kelvin Banks. Now, Kelvin Banks was a tackle at Texas. The Texans seem to be pretty locked in at tackle. Of course, the left tackle, as Lance mentioned earlier this morning, was a guy who started out at guard, because when he was drafted by the Dolphins, they had two tackles they liked, and then they eventually moved them to tackle. They eventually moved Tunsil to tackle, and then we saw what the Texans have had with him as he's been here for the last several years. So I have a noted Longhorn fan to my left. I don't know that I saw anywhere that Kelvin Banks could be a guard, but Lance thinks he can. Kelvin Banks, as a player, first off, let's stick with that because I won't ask you to project him as a guard because at Texas he played tackle. But what you saw of Kelvin Banks, is he not just a first-round pick, but if they had to, put him at right tackle and be a starter?
Yeah, I've no doubt that he can play tackle just because I watched him play tackle in college and he was one of the best in college football basically from the second he started playing at tackle. I mean, his second game at Texas was against Will Anderson in Alabama and he didn't give up a pressure to Alabama. So that's why I think every draft season you look at these tackles and if they're not like perfect, you know, meet all the benchmarks, it's just, move him to guard. And just, like, everyone just gets moved to guard. Because I see it with Campbell, the LSU tackle. LSU tackle, where if your arms aren't a certain length, it's just, move him to guard. Which I get some of that where you want, you know, the benchmarks for measurements to, like, okay, can you actually do this in the league? Like, we don't need – I get why Tez Johnson gets looked at a certain way because he weighs 155 pounds and ran a 4.5. Like, I get that. But at a certain point, it's like, well, this guy was a good tackle his entire time he was in college, including a year in the SEC, and we're moving him to guard because of what?
Because and you have a need if you're the Texans.
And we're trading up to do it? We're trading up to move a guy? I don't understand why you don't, at the you know, if you want to draft a guard, and maybe there's not a guard available in the 20s, we'll just draft another tackle. If you're going to have a tackle move to guard anyway, if you're going to draft a guy to play a position he has never played before, just why do you have to trade up for the right to do that?
I guess because the thought is that eventually you'll move off of Tunsil.
He'll move to left tackle?
Yes, if you're making this projection. Or maybe you – because Blake Fisher appears to just be a tackle. They did not move him inside. They moved Titus Howard inside to play guard. He's not a good guard. They're paying him tackle money. But as I said before, the money he's getting paid to play guard is one of the top guards in football. The top guards in football make what Titus Howard's making right now to play that position. So you have a poor guard, poor money allocation, and now the choice – now this is just Lance's thoughts. I don't know if that's a Texans feel this way. But the thought is to put another guy who doesn't play guard, at least we don't know that he can –
He just hasn't done it before.
Put him there and then have your other guard be a guy who doesn't play it well with a center currently that's not good, and that's the fix for the interior. You have to hope that Kelvin Banks is a offensive line genius. It can just move there and be great at it because it doesn't address the issue if there's a question mark at still remaining at your guard spots. Unless it's an easy transition for him and he's good at it, then you have an answer at least for now before you move him to tackle.
And we saw that this past season with the Eagles with Mekhi Becton, and he struggled to tackle in the NFL. He struggled to tackle. They moved him to guard. Jeff Stoutland coached him up, and he was a really good guard for them. They win the Super Bowl, and so you just have to think that okay, Cole Popovich is a guy who can. Mold these guys in a way that Jeff Stoutland can.
When I think of Cole Popovich, I do think of Jeff Stoutland.
Jeff Stoutland without the resume.
Yes, he is a Jeff Stoutland in training. What is Cole Popovich claim to fame? He was in the same room as the legendary Patriots O-line coach
Dante Scarnecchia.
Yeah, is that his claim to fame?
Yes, close to Dante Scarnecchia. Also disagreed with Chris Strasser last season.
That's what we were told.
That is the reason we shouldn't be worried that a team that sucked at offensive line last season might not completely overhaul the personnel and also is just promoting from within to improve the offensive line. This guy disagreed with the Bozo last year.
I mean, his voice wasn't strong enough to make any changes because he was the underling, but he disagreed. So, of course, his disagreements will lead to improvement. Look, this is one man's opinion, and that's Lance Zierlein. So we do not know what the Texans think.
One man's trash opinion.
Well, that's how you will be counting
it. What does he know?
I don't know what he knows.
Preeminent in what?
Drafting. Draft expert stuff. That's what the promos
say. Of the world?
Say.
World preeminent?
Yes,
I'm on my Noah Lyles stuff right
yes,
now.
Yes, I think he is. I think he's a
proven of what?
He's a world champion of draft experts. Yes, because I don't know what the Brits are thinking about the Texans draft.
Yeah. Let's get Gordon Ramsay on the horn.
Yeah,
I don't know. He was the first British man I could think of.
I mean, well, I was thinking of Piers Morgan, but sure, either one will work. Either one will work.
I'm sure Jack Grealish has some thoughts.
Yeah. He's too busy watching Man City's Premier League title chances go down the drain. He may have some Kelvin Banks thoughts, but either way, I appreciate Lance's thoughts. Kelvin Banks is a talented player. You have to trade up to get him. And maybe his just long way of thinking about it is at some point he'll just be your left tackle because he would like the Texans to get off of Laramie Tunsil. That might be playing a part in this
as
well.
That could be part of it. Yeah. That could be part of it. It's not just Lance, but with all these mock drafters and the guy, they have their own thoughts on what they're especially this early. We don't really know what the team is doing in free agency or what they're doing in the trade market. And so there is some, like, projection in that or some like, well, here's how I think they should handle things this off season. And so if they do all the things I think they should do, or if they do some of the things I think they should do, then they'll have a need here. Or then this plan makes sense where if you just like click the link and open it up, you're like, what?
Yeah.
So there is some of that, again, not just with Lance, but with all these guys. But I would be surprised if they draft I'd just be surprised if they draft Kelvin Banks. I'd be surprised if they trade up. Everything about this is surprising. I do wonder, though, if they draft a Texas football player in the first round, do I have to buy his jersey?
No.
Okay.
You don't have to.
Okay.
I mean,
I do think it'd be funny with the Kelvin to have a number 76 Kelvin Banks.
Yeah. Oh, is he going to take Deculus's number, or is that Kenyon Green's number? I don't know whose number that is. I don't know whose number
that's
that is.
That's the number
right
he
now.
Wore in college.
Yes. I thought it was 78 in college.
Oh, was it 78?
Yeah, I was sure. Like, he can't take Tunsil's number unless Lance gets his wish and they get off of Tunsil. But I still right in line with go get an experienced person at guard. I don't want young guys at guard. And Kelvin Banks is a superior talent. I get it.
Yeah.
But if I have my way and I want to keep my quarterback upright, go get me a couple guards who play the position well and are veterans.
How about this? So in the mock draft, the Texans are trading up to 16 with the Arizona Cardinals to pick Kelvin Banks. According to Lance, or at least the next picks on Lance's mock draft, is Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State, and Matthew Golden, the receiver from Texas. And then 20, there's a defensive edge or an edge from Tennessee. And then a Michigan tight end, Colston Loveland. So if the next picks are all offensive weapons, wouldn't you prefer that the Texans traded up for Tyler Warren instead of a tackle or who you're moving to guard?
Yes, because it would suggest that no one in that range thinks Kelvin Banks is worth the trade up. Unless, but I have to look at their rosters. I don't know if they're in desperate need of a tackle, or maybe those teams are all set.
No, I'm saying if the Texans draft up, trade up to 16 with Warren, Golden, and Loveland all still on the board, wouldn't you just prefer that the trade up is for one of those guys, and then Roger Goodell walks to the stage and says a tackle's name, who they're going to move to guard?
Yeah. Okay,
you would prefer that the Texans make the trade up to 16 and try to get Tyler Warren.
Yes, I. Of course, without knowing what they have done in free agency, let's say this team was static and they didn't make an acquisition for whatever reason.
Yeah.
If I had my choice, I'd rather go get a tight end.
I mean, you are going over top of Kate Stover, and that is tough.
I'd be fine with
you
that.
Have, I think you probably
and Brevin Jordan.
You probably have to give him a call before you make that trade, right?
I don't think Kate Stover warrants
courtesy?
A call.
Courtesy?
No, unlikely. Okay. He's not a quarterback. Hell, if the Falcons don't call Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins. We don't have to call Kate Stover. Yes. Now that they understand what you're doing, saying I would of all the options, a trade up. I'm not getting excited about trading up to move a guy's position so he can play guard. I would rather have a tight end. You're desperate for receiver help. As it stands, Matthew Golden. As far as Texas players, I'd rather have them acquire. Yes, Matthew Golden. I'd take over.
I'd buy
Banks.
A jersey.
You'd buy a which one? Dark. You'd be.
I'd be
deep
the
steel
red,
blue.
The
that's
red
not really
one.
Blue anymore.
Red
deep steel blue anymore. Red, not H-Town blue.
No,
not the H-Town blue uniform.
H-Town blue. I feel like we're far enough away, so I can say this freely. with the, you know, the day they came out, you had to like, no,
you
no they're good.
No, you didn't.
Oh, okay.
I said the day of those helmets look like they belong in NFL Europe.
They do.
Yes.
They do. I especially seeing them on the field, I was like, these are not that
They
great
look like
uniforms.
They should be playing the Rhine Fire. That's yeah. what they look like. Yes. I said that the day of. I didn't like them to begin with. If you're going to do it, whatever H-Town Blue is going to be, go all in on the H-Town Blue color, not some different shade of dark blue and that logo and that color, coloring on the helmet. I'm out. Yeah, we don't help you play golf, sir. We're just doing a show here. So some guy walked up to us like he could sign up, I guess, or get lunch. I'm not sure what he
Two
was
Two guys
doing.
With headsets talking to each other.
Maybe.
Well, he thinks we're event security?
Possibly. I don't know what he thought.
We think we're Sterling K. Brown in Paradise?
Speaking of that, I got to watch that tonight. The season finale of Paradise dropped last night at 11. I got to watch it, see what happens.
Oh, it dropped last night?
It's 11 p.m. is when it happened. Did you
watched.
Catch up over the weekend?
Yeah, I caught up over the weekend. Watched four per day. Yeah.
All right, so we're
great,
there.
Good stuff.
Telling you.
Good stuff.
Told you when we talked about it. So Paradise, that's what I'm going to watch when I get home, the Paradise season finale. Already renewed for a season two, so we don't have to worry about
it. Oh, that bumped me out.
You just wanted it to end?
Yeah, I wanted it. Because without getting into it, like, it's just way more interesting if this is, like, as opposed to, like, I can already kind of see where season two will be.
But they have too many open storylines, Sean.
With the, close them.
With episode 7, they opened up so many. Like, if episode 7 doesn't happen and what happens in episode 7 doesn't occur, then I would be like, yeah, you know, you could have a series finale.
Yeah, you have 70 minutes. Close them.
But when episode 7 occurs, you can't get all that in.
All right.
That's all.
All right.
Look, understand. You wanted you didn't want to devote any more time. You thought eight episodes would have been enough.
I did, just like Shogun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, good.
This
finally, a nice contained story
but this one
without
have subtitles.
A season 2. It's even better than Shogun.
Because you don't
it
have
It just
to
doesn't
read.
Have
Mariko?
Yeah, Mariko-sama.
Yeah. All right. So Sean would like a good TV show to end.
I mean, I would like it to be a movie, honestly. Give me 2.5 hours.
You're one of those.
After a while, you know, seeing everyone's grief story, I'm like, so glad I'm spending 7 hours.
Look, I'm not guaranteeing that, like, anything past season 2 is going to be good because at some point, diminishing returns.
Yeah, it turns into Walking Dead.
Yeah. Where if Paradise gets like 4 spinoffs, apparently no nukes hit if that happens. All right, so let's. We're way late. Before we wrap it up for the segment, I want to talk about Monument Chevrolet. It's not officially spring, but spring is getting closer and closer, and that means spring savings from Monument Chevrolet. And what are spring savings? Employee pricing. If you want a Chevy Silverado this month from March, in the month of March from Monument, you get the chance to enjoy their employee pricing, which means good deals. And they always have great deals. They're going to do everything they can to make you happy because they understand the customer should have an enjoyable experience when you're out there. They're not going to be pushy. They're going to be friendly and get you in the best vehicle they can and make sure it's right for you. So you have the new Chevy Silverados you can get into with employee pricing. Of course, they have pre-owned inventory that you can take a look at MonumentChevrolet.com. And if you decide to get a pre-owned car, remember this, 6 months, 6,000-mile warranty for those cars. So we all know people can be a little bit apprehensive about pre-owned cars. They're not sure the history. Well, Monument Chevrolet will inform you about all that. And if something happens to that car that's not foreseen, they will take care of you with that 6 month, 6,000-mile warranty. And, of course, they have a great service center as well. I'm mentioning the service department because it's a one-stop shop. It's not just about buying a car. If you have any problems, you can bring that car right back. And the service people have been there for years. They know the people that bring their cars in by name, and that's part of the entire Monument Chevrolet experience. So check everything they have to offer at monumentchevrolet.com. And, of course, you can go on out there in Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225, Monument Chevrolet. Just remember this, Chevrolet, together let's drive.